This week we're talking about the Apple event on September 15th. That was the Apple Watch Series 6, Apple Watch SE, iPad 8, iPad Air 4, Apple One, and Apple Fitness Plus event. And we'll get to that in just a little bit. First, I want to discuss some TV Plus stuff I've been watching. So Ted Lasso, I had some free time on my schedule last weekend, and I was just like, let me binge some TV Plus and see what I've been missing. And
like that weekend, when was the last time you'd watched something on the service, just to get some context?
The Out Show documentary series, like, yeah.
The visible, like, LGBTQ thing. Okay. So that would have been back in, like, February or March.
I spent no pandemic time watching TV. Correct.
You would have seen, you saw The Banker in the cinema.
Yeah, it was the last thing I saw in theaters.
Yeah, so that was, like, March. So, okay, so you've taken, like, you know, a decent break, which is, you know, I'm just interested in when, you know, and then you pull back up again.
I've been getting my money's worth with my free trial. So... you know, like Amazing Stories, didn't that click with me?
Yeah, Amazing Stories is bad.
Yeah. Little America. I tried, people loved it. It was like critically acclaimed, but I couldn't.
It's all right.
Get into
Defending
it.
Jacob's good. That came out in April.
Yeah. And that one, I think part of the problem with those is that the tenser mood ones just during a pandemic wasn't in the mood for. And so Ted Lasso fit the bill. Like, the way I learned about Ted Lasso, like the premise of the show, aside from like our coverage of it being a thing, is I was watching The Late Show with Stephen Colbert on, I pay for CBS All Access and then I get Showtime through Apple TV Plus or Apple TV Channels, the TV app. And so that's like part of my routine is the day after it airs, I watch it on my Mac while I'm working. And Jason Sudeikis, is that his name?
Yeah.
He was the guest, and like the reason for being a guest that night was to promote the show, and you know, gave kind of the premise of and how it began and everything with that ad from a long time ago. And I was like, oh, that's actually kind of interesting. I might watch that when it comes out, and it was before it aired. And so I guess they did 3 episodes to start, maybe. I don't really know, but that's my guess.
Yeah. Like a lot of the TV Plus comedies, they've dropped all at once, but. Mm-hmm. As the pandemic has hit and their future production roadmap has affected,
they're slowing down.
So all the comedies now are also being done weekly, like 3 episodes and then 1 per week. Yeah.
Yeah. So when I started watching, I was binging it and I found so delightful. Like I wanted to tell you about it because I know you hadn't seen it yet. But it was A, funny. B, the characters were, you know, like it was quality. And then C was like there was character development, so not just like good actors, but also like the story wasn't like stale.
Because I think if you just watch like you see the premise or you read like the synopsis, it kind of sounds more like slapstick comedy, right?
Yeah, like, and it's not like the character development is so rich in it that it's like the. It's almost, you know, it's feel good more than even comedy, you know. So I've really enjoyed that. But I got to the episode.
And it's
7.
The finale tonight, by the way.
Oh, really? How many episodes last are there?
It's 8. It's an 8 episode season.
Oh, no. I thought I had more. So I began watching it when the 7th episode was out, which is probably like the 4th week of it being out. And I thought I was like, you know. When it ended, I was like, oh, that's a weird place to end. And then the TV app was like, up next Friday. I was like, oh, okay. Well, now I can't binge it.
A new addition, by the way. One of the few changes they made to the TV app this year is now they show a coming soon for the next episode, like a placeholder title for the next episode.
And that was on the Fire TV. So it's the TV app, you know, and it's on its own. And I was like, my plan was to wait for the next 3 to come out and then like binge the last 3, but I guess there's only one more.
Yeah, they've renewed for season 2, but obviously that won't be coming for a while.
So if you haven't seen Ted Lasso, it's not stupid. It's funny. And it's also heartwarming and rich. I watched Greyhound.
That's the Tom Hanks movie.
It is. Yeah. You've seen that one.
Yeah.
On the podcast.
And by the way, I want to watch Ted Lasso. I just haven't got around to it yet. It's not like anything.
You've been busy, though. That's
I've got stuff to do. Hey, Greyhound is all right, I'd say.
Yeah, you said on the podcast it was okay. Yeah. You know, during the film, it has like a countdown until the strike or whatever that they're, you know, trekking toward. I kept thinking, okay, that's when there's going to be like this big action scene. And then spoilers, I guess. I don't know. The story is like their journey toward it. And then they like get sent off and then it's over.
Yeah, it's kind of like the same day 3 times over.
Yeah.
Sort of.
So it was kind of anticlimactic to me. I was like, wait, we're not going to get a big fight scene? Like, it's just been along the way.
That's definitely one of those movies where if it wasn't backed by a true story basis, people wouldn't be interested in it at all. But
yeah, or Tom Hanks.
Yeah, or Tom Hanks, right. But because it has Tom Hanks and it's a true story retelling, like, it has some weight to it. But
yeah,
it's definitely not like a, you know, opening, middle, big action scene, end. It's,
yeah.
You know, it's nice. It's nice. I enjoyed watching it, but if I'd have gone to the cinema to see it, like it was originally planned to, I think I'd have been disappointed.
Definitely. And I thought that The Banker was a better story.
Yeah, I agree. Banker's a better movie.
Yeah, better story. So, yeah. And then, let's see, what else have I seen or not seen?
Central Park, the animated cartoon musical.
Yeah, I'm skeptical. No, I haven't seen it yet. I don't know.
Good ratings. Yeah. I don't really like cartoons, but if you want like upbeat comedy type stuff, it's definitely in that alley.
Yeah, I should try it out. But I think it's called Long Way Up. Is the
Long
name
Way
of
Up?
It? Yeah. So that is what's the actor's name? I forget how to pronounce it.
Ewan McGregor.
Ewan McGregor and his like, you know, as he says, mate.
So Charlie Borman.
Yeah, that is the series where it follows those two on electric Harley Davidson motorcycles. I think it's called Livewire is like the model. And then they're supported by electric pickup trucks from Rivian. And the whole thing is that they like travel across, what is it, like South America to North America?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. On those EV bikes. And that's like all in itself. Like, that's really cool because I bought a motorcycle in May. I've been riding a motorcycle since May and I absolutely love it. So it's like, okay, there's a motorcycle show on Apple TV Plus. Like, how cool is that for me? And then it's an electric.
Yeah.
Vehicle.
And they like teased it, like, just as you told me you'd got into motorcycle. And I was like, look at this. They're about to do this show.
Yeah. You told me, you were like, hey, this thing's coming. And I was like, oh, neat. Yeah. So that's very cool. I didn't realize until this week that it's the third installment in a series that has been going on for years. The first, there's Long Way Around and Long Way Down, mm-hmm. and this is Long Way Up. It was David Smith on Twitter who, like, I tweeted out that I was excited for the show to premiere this Friday. Can't wait to watch it. And he was like, yeah, I loved the first two. So I had to go and look them up.
It was originally broadcast on BBC, which is like public television here, back in like 2003. So that was where it started. And it was apparently, I didn't know about it until, you know, I did research when they announced the new one, but apparently it was a huge phenomenon and like people loved it.
I've been watching them on YouTube because there's an account, it's like called Cat Pizza or something, that has all the episodes.
Because they're not actually currently, they're not available anywhere to stream or anything. Like,
yeah, which I think you mentioned that there was some speculation or rumors that maybe Apple will stream them.
Yeah, there are reports that they have streaming rights to both seasons. So, and they haven't officially confirmed it, but like what they did with Fraggle Rock, when the new season goes on, I think they're going to put the back catalog on.
Yeah,
too.
Fraggle isn't on my list of things to catch up on.
I don't blame you on that one.
Nor the back catalog. It was really funny because I was watching on YouTube and on the motorcycle helmet of one of the guys, when in the first like 5 minutes of the series ever, they've got this big honking Apple sticker on the back of his helmet, which I would never do, but it's like, oh, that's destined for Apple TV. You know, 17 years before it exists.
Yeah.
So I can't wait to watch that. So that's my TV Plus update.
And that is weekly episodes, by the way. It's 3 on tomorrow, and it's I think it's 11 episodes total, so it'll be weekly from then on.
Oh, cool. Do you know how long they are? Like half an hour?
I think they're like 45 minutes, yeah.
That's cool, because the first one that I've seen, which I think is The Long Way Around, is like 4 or 5 45-minute episodes. So that's awesome. I've been very entertained by watching that 2003 version. Next I'm going to watch the second installment before I begin the new thing. But it holds up over time, and like the new thing is going to look so good in the quality. Like part of their in the first inversion, like they're figuring out how are we going to film this, because they wanted to go on this journey just as friends. They met on a movie set. And they were like, well, we want to document this because it's going to be kind of neat. Just so we can like watch it later. And they're like, well, we might as well like document it properly. So they hired like
the first season they did in like a shoestring budget pretty much.
Yeah. They're like calling motorcycle companies. I think KTL's one and BMW, and like the first company wouldn't do it because they were afraid that they would fail. And like they didn't want their bikes to be responsible for their failure. And then so they use BMW. You know, this time it's Harley with their electric bikes. But I will say, you know, we have electric.co our sister site that covers EVs, Tesla, and green energy. And there have been people who have done similar things like cross country 3,000 mile trips on the same type of Harley electric bike. There's another company called called Zero, I believe. And they have bikes. They charge differently. I'm really interested in living this experience myself. Like I love the travel. I have been lately anyway. So I'm in discussions. I'm pitching it.
And the Zach Cole Travel Show coming soon to a streaming service.
There's some warmth to it, you know. Like, so maybe Happy Hour will be on the road for like 6 months, and you know, in a little bit, we'll see. But
we'll see.
That's it's a good time.
But yeah, who knew? TV Plus is pretty good. Shocker.
I mean, when there's things made for you, basically, yeah. And then there's some App Store news that happened between last week and this week before we get to the event. Yeah. So what's that?
So quickly, Apple released updated App Store review guidelines on Friday, before obviously their event on Tuesday. They were trying to cut off some of the criticism about recent things. And the main policy that's exposed here is about the streaming game services. Obviously, we talked about this before. And Apple's policy was like, no, thank you. You can't do it because they don't want to have a catalog of games. You have to submit games individually. What their new quote unquote new policy is basically just writing down what the old policy was, but they never had it written down because they called it like a new policy. And some publications covered it as Apple loosens rules on streaming game services. But that's not really true because they still require a company to submit separate binaries, so separate apps to every single game in the catalog. And when you have an app update to that game, you have to submit an app update through the App Store, which is kind of insane because obviously all the code for all these games is running on a server in the cloud, and it's no different from Netflix, where they just stream video and they can add content to the library whenever they want. It's a game rather than video. So Apple's, in my opinion, got very antiquated policies here, and they should definitely sort it out. Like, there are ways. They quote, like, screen time, parental controls, age ratings, you know, child protection for as reasons why they want stuff to be submitted as individual apps through the store. But there are ways to achieve that don't require, like, separate apps each and every time. What people want is one app. Like, you click on Xbox Live, and then you just play all the games inside of Xbox Live. You don't have to worry about juggling downloads, and neither does the companies have all the busy work of managing it either. So, they're like, and at least they've acknowledged something public that they are, you know, trying to negotiate with these people, but they haven't gone far enough by any means. Yeah. Like, they basically did nothing. They just said what they said before.
Yeah. Yeah. It was the coverage was like masterful from Apple's side because it was like, you know, it was embargoed. They invited lots of press to see the release before it happened. And so they got, Apple got to kind of frame the story as like, we have new rules that apply to game streaming services. And so that was a lot of the coverage, was like Apple updates their App Store policy to work with game streaming services. Sure, technically, but none of these accommodate what game streaming services need right now.
Yeah, and so I think it's very unlikely that Microsoft and PlayStation are going to bother with the hassle of making separate app binaries for every single game in the catalog, getting them updated, getting them reviewed. Like, the logistics of managing hundreds and hundreds of games is hard on its own, and like, yeah, what you get in the user experience, like Microsoft released a statement like, this is not a good experience for players, and it's completely true because you're allowed to have a catalog app, but that just links out to the App Store. So you go on like the Xbox app, you find a game you want to play, you click that, you then get shot off to the App Store, you have to download the app, then when the app downloads, you'd have to log in with your Xbox account, and then you go back to the catalog, you download another game, it does exactly the same thing, and you just like, it's not good. And I really hope they take their current stance and relax it properly so everyone can have what they actually want, which is a single catalog app that you can log into. And then we can have arguments over the 30% cut in the in-app purchase rules. Because that, like, at least that's a fair, you know, fair argument. At this point, they're not even at that stage. They're just talking about the validity of the idea and concept of a streaming service.
Yeah, all it does is make iOS, which is really good for gaming compared to Mac, in terms of, like, reputation and everything, look at
worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. It affects the Mac, iPad and Apple TV. Like, you could have a good broadband connection, an Apple TV, and, you know, a hypothetical streaming service game platform on there. You could basically have an Xbox wherever you wanted in a tiny little box. But as it stands today, it's not going to happen. So that makes me sad.
Yeah, it's no good. All right. This week we are sponsored by
DevonThink, a new sponsor. All right.
Thanks, DevonThink.
We're sponsored by DevonThink. Get 10% off DevonThink 3 with the code 9to5Mac2020. Check out the link in the show notes. DevonThink is the most professional document and information management application for the Mac. It comes from Devon Technologies, who've been making apps for the Mac since 2002, so they know what they're doing. DevonThink helps you collect, file, organize, edit, and annotate all kinds of documents. You place live web pages, like a Google Doc, say, right next to local files. You can organize all of your documents using groups, smart groups, and integrated artificial intelligence can automatically file and allows for searching. DevonThink syncs all of your data with iCloud, Dropbox, and any web dev server. Of course, everything is securely encrypted. When you're away from your Mac, you can use DevonThink to go on iPhone or iPad, so all of your documents are there with you at all times. They've also launched a brand new web interface, perfect for collaborating in small to medium-sized teams, whether you're using Macs or Windows PCs. What you can do in DevonThink is endless. A truly professional document and information management application for the Mac. 9to5Mac Happy Hour listeners can get 10% off their newest DevonThink 3 release or upgrade to it with the coupon code 9to5Mac2020. That's number 9, T-O, number 5, M-A-C, dash 2020. Check out the link in the show notes. Our thanks to Devon Technologies for their support of Happy Hour.
Thank you, DevonThink. Event time. How does this begin? This is one of those streamed productions, not a live event because of pandemic.
Very similar to how they managed WWDC, obviously. They had this crazy drone shots and transitions, and they land inside Apple Park with Tim Cook standing behind the glass. And you can
how
see
long was the event, by the way?
The event was barely an hour.
Yeah, I recall talking last week about how in this format, in this, you know, rumor cycle, that it's probably on the shorter side. And I was editing last week's episode, and I heard you say, like, it'll be an hour and a half. Otherwise, why bother? And I was like, it'll be less because of what's happening. It was less.
I was wrong. I was wrong. I feel like the content that they had, they could have stretched it to an hour and a half just by talking slower and expanding on some things. But they chose to, you know, make it tight. And yeah. In hindsight, it was better for it. So
it was, yeah.
Yeah. And they opened up the show very plainly by saying, today we're focusing on two products, iPad and Apple Watch. And that immediately, you know, just undercuts all of the upfront rumors that, you know, there's not going to be the iPhone announcement here, right? If you've come to this event expecting an iPhone, you can turn off the stream now because it's not going to happen.
Yeah, and there was no one more thing or anything like that. Like, when it was done, it was done.
It was done.
This is the first event where I've come to YouTube and did like a live commentary over the event. We got shut down during the middle of it for like rebroadcasting the event without sound, just with captions, and then we came back without even that. And a lot of people came and just to listen to us talk about it, and that was really cool. But I found this event to be like a lot of fun because of that. But you know, it was a good event. It was a good event. It's a good part one. It's, you know, the next hour will be like Mac and iPhone stuff. But you know, and that one will probably, I will say the October event or whenever it is will probably be way longer than 1 hour because of how much stuff's included. So
yeah. But first up at the full 2020 event was the Apple Watch. You had a very weird introduction of like Tim saying how he uses his Apple Watch during the day. He was like, I love my Apple Watch. I use it when I get up in the morning to check the weather and check my news. I use it at work for calendar, and I'm really trying to go to the gym, so I'm using all these fitness apps. Like, they never normally frame it as, what does Tim Cook do? But for some reason, he did it both for the Apple Watch and he did it for the iPad introduction.
He hasn't done that since the watch introduction originally.
Yeah, like, it was a weird framing, but I guess they were trying to find an intro for, you know, the video film presentation.
Yeah.
Then obviously they have the usual recap of how the Apple Watch is helping in medical capacities with a nice video, mm-hmm. talking about different cases where people have had like serious medical problems and the Apple Watch being able to call for help, or, you know, detect with the ECG that they have heart problems early. That's the, you know, very usual formula. They have that in every event, whether it's, you know, on stage or not. It's just you don't have the clapping in between that slows it down. So it felt, you know, very natural. And up front, they even said that they are partnering with the Mount Sinai Warrior Watch Study, which is going to use the Apple Watch to evaluate the impact of how COVID symptoms develop and even predict infection. So they're, you know, they're very much, and they double down this later when we actually get to the new hardware, but they're, you know, they very closely tie like COVID research with Apple Watch hardware.
Yeah. All of their, I picked up on that. I mean, it makes sense, but all of their health stuff, the watch is the watch, but they rely on universities, you know, partners with authority to do all the heavy lifting when it comes to saying something more that about the watch being capable of things, you know?
Yeah. And I bet some like newspapers or people that just, they've heard the word COVID in the Apple Watch and it would be like, the Apple Watch can cure COVID or it can detect COVID. It's like, that's going way overblown. Like they're doing early research studies into how, you know, the Apple Watch's sensors can help detect some of these things early. But of course, this stuff takes years and years to come to fruition. Like,
yeah, hopefully previously, we have vaccines everywhere before this is even, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so it's nice to say, and it is, but I wouldn't say it's like wholly genuine, because I feel like it just gives them press when there isn't actually much substance behind it. Because these research studies, they're fine or whatever, but at the end of the day, as an individual customer, you're probably not going to be able to benefit from them. Like, they did the Apple Watch heart study, which was fine for the participants of the study, but at the end of it, they published a scientific paper, and then that's it, essentially, right?
Like, well, you got some new heart rate alerts.
True.
Out of it, I think. I think it's, you know, connected.
Well, maybe in 4 years' time, we'll have COVID-19 warnings on the watch.
Maybe it doesn't just apply, though, to COVID-19, but also to any kind of flu, or, you know.
Respiratory disease, yeah,
right,
exactly.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, obviously, it's important research, but in terms of, like, a consumer buying a product today, it's kind of irrelevant,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's announcing some research, not announcing results.
Yeah.
And features.
And so after that intro, Tim passes off to Jeff Williams, and he announces the Apple Watch Series 6. And what is the Series 6? It's the Apple Watch Series 5 with a blood oxygen sensor.
The chip is faster.
True.
Which was not true from going from Series 4 to Series 5. They called it S4 for Series 4, which was faster than Series 3. And then they called it S5 for Series 5 because it had a different display controller and a compass and some different combined bands for cellular. This time they actually changed the speed of it. I forget the number, but it's faster.
Yeah, so they have the new S6 chip, which they referred to as Apple Silicon. And even on the subtitles, it was capital A, capital S. So I think they're trying to brand that for everything, not just the Mac chips, right?
Yes,
So all of these chips are still going to have, like, model identifiers, like A13 or S6 or A14. And then presumably there'll be a Mac one too, like M1 or something when they announce it. But they're trying to, you know, they're really branding the family as Apple Silicon now. Like, it's all under the same roof. And they said that the S6 chip is 20% faster. So that's 20% faster than Series 4, obviously, because Series 4 and Series 5 had the same performance.
Yeah.
Which is fine. Like, I'll take it.
Yeah. It's a speed improvement. And if you come from Series 3, it's even faster. So.
Yeah, if you come from the original Apple Watch, it's 1,000 times faster because the original was
pretty slow. And WatchOS 7 feels faster too, because of all the animation improvements. So.
Yeah. But really, like, the hero of the product is the blood oxygen stuff, and it
works. It has a great animation when you're, like, you're measuring your blood ox. Visually, it looks super cool. Like, they nail it just like they did with the ECG. I think the icon is white, which is a bummer. We always start from that. But visually, it's a really cool animation as you capture. It's single handed, so unlike ECG, you don't have to, like, touch the crown. You just have to kind of stay in place for 30 seconds or so.
Because it uses the back crystal sensor, so, like, the photodiode and the infrared sensors on the back.
Yeah.
And if you actually look at the back, that's the way to tell the difference between a Series 5 watch and a Series 6 watch, is you look at the back of it, because The rest of the design's the same, but the back crystal has been redesigned again.
Yeah.
So now it's like, they went from having like a triangular set of three. So when they did the ECG, then it was like a circle. And now it's like four circles in a ring. So they're slowly just adding rings and upon rings and upon rings.
I mean,
with red lights.
It's good that it's dynamic, though, I guess. but yeah, like, you have to actively do it to get an in the moment readout. But there's also passive checking.
They weren't, like, entirely clear on exactly how it is.
Maybe
they
just say power.
Yeah, I mean, like, the technically the heart rate is passive too, because they don't, you know, they're not recording your heart rate every single second. It's like once every 10 minutes.
That's true. And you do get alerts for heart rate, you know, as it checks, you can get alerts. And maybe with this too, you can get alerts.
Yeah. And same with ECG, like you have to actively do an ECG, but then in the background, every now and again, they'll check for arrhythmia problems passively, but it's not happening continuously.
There's a new metric that they alert you for if it's too low.
Yeah, the new metric is based, but this is available to all watchers.
Yeah.
So
WatchOS 7.
In WatchOS 7, they have better algorithms for estimating your VO2 max level.
Yeah.
And that is, they said before it could do a limited range, now it can do the full range. And later this year, so it's not currently in WatchOS 7, but coming later this year, they will be able to give you low cardio fitness alerts, okay, similar to the low heart rate or high heart rate alerts. Okay. And that will be available on all watches, but presumably the Series 6 one is more accurate.
Yeah, I felt like, you know, one of my comments about WatchOS 7 before this event was that it was felt like it was not a whole lot of stuff there. I mean, we had more reporting about what was going to be in WatchOS 7 than what was presented at WWDC. This event, like, completed all our reporting, you know, things like school time and the whole family mode and stuff. And there were a lot more watch faces that we'll get to in a little while. But it's like, this is the rest of WatchOS 7. And now it feels like it's a full-sized update for the
watch.
Yeah,
like, they kind of held back some software announcements for the fall to beef up the Apple Watch announcements.
Yeah, the only thing you didn't get was, like, the rest of the sleep tracking story.
Yeah, so the blood oxygen sensor, it takes 15 seconds using the app directly, and then it does, quote, periodic background readings. Mm-hmm. The problem I have with the blood oxygen sensor is, yes, you have the nice app, and it is really beautiful animations again. Mm-hmm. And you have the background alerts that you can see in the health app. But you just get a number at the end of the day. Like,
yeah, that's what one-day hands-on reviews came out today from folks. New York Times, I think Brian Chen, he focused heavily on, okay, I got this sensor, this data, what next? And to be fair, like if you buy one from Walgreens, and you're just going to get the number, you're not going to get like, what does it mean? But Apple has the opportunity to do a whole lot more with that, and they didn't.
Well, yeah, if they're going to build it into the smartwatch, it should be a smart blood oxygen meter. I just don't want the number. Like when they do the ECG, it will tell you, you know, normal rhythm or maybe signs of atrial fibrillation, right? Like at least that's something actionable. Or you get high heart rate notifications or low heart rate notifications. The blood oxygen sensor, like you're going to press the button on, you're going to hold your finger or you don't hold your finger. You just press the button and wait 15 seconds. And then it will say, okay, your blood oxygen's 97%. It's like, okay. Then you do it again, and it'll say your blood oxygen is 98%. Yeah. And it's like, you check again, your blood oxygen is 95%. It's like, but it's not actually going to give you suggestions or recommendations to do anything. Like, that's the problem I have with these sensors. And like, the ECG one, to a lesser extent, but it still does apply. It's like, with activity and calorie tracking and stuff, like, you have the rings, you have something to achieve and do and respond to, and the watch can update and react to it. But with blood oxygen, it's like, you as a person can't like change your life to make your blood oxygen different, I don't think. And it doesn't seem like the Apple Watch will like, it's not like you say your blood oxygen can be improved by doing this, this, and this, and we'll help you do it over the course of the next year and stuff. Like, it's just, here's a number. Okay, great.
I'm going to go back to March 2020 and in my reporting when we first reported on 95 Mac that there'd be blood oxygen detection. This is what I, because this is this is also long ago. I wrote that blood oxygen levels between 95 and 100% are considered healthy. Below 80% may lead to compromised heart and brain functionality. Risk of respiratory or cardiac arrest is common after continued blood oxygen saturation. So I know more from our reporting of the rumor than from when you actually use the watch, but I guess that's what it is. And, so it doesn't tell you this, but what you should know is that 95 200 is normal. 80 to 95 is questionable. Below 95 or below 80 is very bad. And if it's very bad for a long time, then it can be very, very bad. That's the gist of it is.
Great. That's the problem with these. That's the problem with these health features, though, is that for 99.9% of the people that buy them, they'll put it on their wrist. It will say they're fine, and then they never need the feature ever again. Like,
yeah,
lifetime of the watch.
There are some cool use cases. Like I've seen athletes will regularly have pulse oximeters. Pilots will as well. They'll have the hardware to check them already. Now it'll be on the watch, so it'll kind of you won't need that hardware anymore. Just like you won't need an external heart rate monitor, you'll have the watch. And so I think in those scenarios, like there's times when a pilot can check it and like they'll want to know, okay, I'm at this level now. How
the question is though, is it going to be reliable and accurate enough for the pilots to use versus the dedicated machines? And it's not clear. Like Apple didn't really have statements about how good it was. Like when they introduced the ECG, they said it was equivalent to like a 2-lead ECG, right? But for the blood oximeter, they didn't really have anything to compare it against.
Yeah, I mean, surely it's like the one that I had in my store back in March cost $16. So surely it's like on par with what a $16 one can do.
Yeah. Some of the reviews that came out today said that it's buggy and like, or at least you have to like hold your arm really still for it to be able to actually get a reading. So that's unfortunate.
I'm going to read some about the $15 one or $16 one from Amazon called, it's from a company called Zaccurate. Zaccurate, they say that it accurately determines your SpO2 pulse rate and pulse strength in 10 seconds. So that's a data point. It takes 10 seconds. Apple's is 15. Not too bad. And that sport enthusiasts like mountain climbers, skiers, bikers, and anyone interested in measuring SpO2 and pulse rate will benefit from it. And accommodates a wide range of finger sizes. So you don't have to worry about that with the watch because it's on your wrist. you know, but I mean, that's it. And so we have that one data point that it takes 10 seconds for this thing, 15 for Apple. That's kind of on par. And then the athletic and health angle there. I have a friend, Jake Pugh, who lives in Austin, Texas, who is a pilot. And his comment to me was between the blood oxygen sensor, saturation monitor, the new GMT watch face that we'll talk about in a little bit, like those things, and then the always on altimeter that we'll talk about in a little bit, like those make Series 6 kind of the ultimate pilot watch, like what a pilot would want to have. And he's been offering to fly me for a long time. And so we've decided, because I'm not going to do a Series 6 purchase, if I get one sent to me, I'll review it, but otherwise I won't. He ordered one because he's crazy about this stuff, and we're going to do a flight together. Like, you know, he knows what he's talking about in terms of like, he's always used to watching this stuff, you know, from sensors. And so,
that'd be cool.
Yeah. That'll be neat. That's coming probably in October, November.
Yeah. So you mentioned the, always on altimeter, which allows it to, cause they added the altimeter in Series 5, right? Like it couldn't measure elevation before at all. And so now with Series 6, it does constant and continuous elevation tracking, and they showed the example of someone going up this really, really tall mountain, and the little complication on the watch face was constantly updating with feet and inches. So it's, I mean, again, this feels like something that I don't think any normal person is ever going to, like, if you can get an altimeter reading every minute, is it really going to be any different? Like, you're not going to travel a million miles a second in that time frame, right? Like, I feel like that's there's nothing wrong with
this watch. It's more passive data tracking.
Yeah, like, there's nothing wrong with this update. And, you know, if you're coming from Series 3 or you're coming new to Apple Watch, like, it's great, right? And they're just continuing to push the product forward. But I wouldn't call it, like, a significant step forward of a year.
I mean, this is like an S update to the watch.
Yeah. Because then the only other hardware change is that now the always-on display can be up to 2.5 times brighter when it's in always on mode.
Yeah, that almost made me want to buy this watch, because it was like, okay, that's something about the watch now that I don't like. That's a serious opportunity for improvement, is that the always on display is necessarily dimmer when it's in the resting mode than the active mode to save battery. And so one of the effects of that is if your wrist is lowered, it's not active, and you're looking at it outside, then because it's so dim, you might not be able to see what it says without actually activating the watch. It's not a make or break for me, but I've got an eye injury that makes everything much darker anyway. It's like wearing shades with one of my eyes. So it's a factor there, and like any improvement is useful. And I asked Stephen Aquino, who has a similar eye issue, and he knocked down on Series 5 that like this feature is not that useful for me because I can't see it when it's dim. So I asked him, I was like, what is it like with the Series 6? He has one of the review units, and his answer was that the jury's still out, so it's undecided if it's better or not. But that that's a make or break feature for him. It seems to be, like you mentioned, you highlighted up to 2.5 times brighter. That it means that it depends on how bright it is. It'll adjust, and it won't always be brighter. It depends on the environment that you're in.
Yeah, and sometimes you don't want it to be at maximum brightness because it'd be too distracting. Right?
Yeah.
And presumably this is what they've gained from the removing the force touch hardware, which is probably like a millimeter of space.
Yeah, that was what I gathered, because I wondered before the event, you know, okay, what is the entry to wire? When they take it out, what do they gain? You know, we'll probably see in teardowns more battery life or a bigger battery. And
so they also said the S6 chip was more efficient too, so I guess that contributes.
Those two things help. They didn't change battery life though, like still up to 18 hours, which is okay, I guess, but it's not more than the first watch was.
Yeah, and some people definitely said that with Series 5, if they could push the battery life a bit further, it would be nice, right?
Yeah.
Like with my Series 4, I don't have a problem with battery at all, but the Always On does obviously use some power, so
yeah.
It'd be nice.
Yeah, we haven't tried out the Series 6 yet, so we'll have to see what we think about it if we get our hands on one. But the reviews, it didn't seem clear that it's like 2.5 times brighter in a big way, because the max, you know, they measure in nits of brightness and it's still 1000. So it isn't like the max brightness goes up. What they change is in software, how much will it let the dimmed mode be brighter, you know?
And all right, let me tell you about LinkedIn and then we can talk about the watch faces.
Cool.
Small businesses have unique needs, and despite the current economic uncertainty, one thing stays the same: the importance to have the right people on your team. When your business is ready to make its next hire, LinkedIn Jobs can help by matching your role with qualified candidates so that you can find the right person quickly. LinkedIn Jobs is an active community of professionals, and LinkedIn has more than 690 million members worldwide. Simply start by posting your job title, company name, and location. LinkedIn Jobs screen candidates with the hard and soft skills that you're looking for. It puts your job post in front of qualified members, and it's targeted to show up for people that are looking for a job just like yours. LinkedIn Jobs finds people that are not only qualified, but fit in with your company's culture. LinkedIn does the legwork so that you can focus on hiring the person who will transform your business. It helps you hire the right person faster. When your business is ready to make that next hire, find the person with LinkedIn Jobs. You can pay what you want and get the first $50 off. Just visit linkedin.com/happyhour. Again, that's linkedin.com/happyhour to get $50 off your first job post. Terms and conditions apply. Our thanks to LinkedIn Jobs for sponsoring the show.
All right, clock faces.
So this is one of the things that they could have announced with WatchOS 7 at WWDC, but they didn't. And notably, WatchOS 7 in June was the first time they've announced a major watch update without any new faces at all, right? So here's what they saved. The big kahunas. Here's what they say for the fork.
They had Chronograph Pro and it was...
Okay, yeah, they did have Chronograph Pro. Yeah. But I didn't remember that as a new face, because it's basically like Chronograph with a tiny change on it. Like, it's almost just like a style of the Chronograph face.
It's so meh. They had a what's new in Watch, or like new faces in Watch OS section in the Watch app, and that was it. And it's like, okay, there's clearly going to have more when this is final.
Yeah. And so we got, what, six? We got GMT face, count-up face, typograph face, the artist face, Memojis, and Stripes. Now, Stripes is the one that we obviously reported on months ago, because that was like the flags face, which we thought was going to be tied into the Olympics, but obviously the Olympics aren't happening. And I think what they've come up with here is a nice abstraction over the flags idea. It's just stripes that you can choose, you can rotate and twist the angle of, and you can choose what colors you want on each stripe. So if you want to reflect, like, LGBTQ rainbow, you can do that. If you want it to reflect your home country, you can do that. If you just want some cool stripes in a pretty, you know, any setting that you want, you can set that up as well. So, like, not being just limited to flags.
Have you played with it yet?
Nice and flexible. Yeah. And you can, like, go into the editing screen on the watch itself, and you click on each individual bar, and you can change the color, or you twist the thing around. The only thing that I was kind of disappointed by is that if I wanted to make, like, the Union Jack, which is the English flag, you can only do...
That's the name of it.
Yeah. Surprise, who knew? You can only do like angles of a line. You can't do like triangles. And the UK flag is like a cross. So you can't make it. Like, you can have the colours, but it won't actually look like the flag, if that makes sense.
I found that it's like probably the most configurable face, not in terms of like how different it can be, but just how much activity you do on the watch to customize it. It's like, it's like a super power user third party app, you know, that, that Apple would never do, but it's like, yeah. You spend a lot of time in this thing, but it's from Apple, you know?
You know what it's like? It's kind of like one of David Smith's apps. Like you get these 4,000 editing options.
Like Watch Smith. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's a watch face that you control on the watch. And, you know, cause I spent a lot of time. It's like, I want to, you pick how many stripes, you pick the colors, then you pick the angles. I was like, how could, and I made a pretty cool thing. Like I did a thing with, I guess, 5 stripes and it was like black, white, black, white, black. And it just looked like equal, like a quality, you know? And it's like, oh, that's kind of a cool thing. But nothing that I like live with. But my point on the stripes face is that you probably are better off configuring it from the watch app. Mm-hmm. And then even from then, looking at the gallery of like what they pre-configure, because on the watch, like you pick it, there's no pre-configuration. On the watch app, they've got some options set up, and then that's where watch face steering and watch OS 7 is useful. If someone puts in the work to make a watch face like your flag, then share it and just take it from there, because it's a
that's
lot
what
of work
you need. You need a
up.
Website which is the stripes face for all the flags, and you just download it.
Yeah. Exactly. Or make that
that's
an
why
app.
They made watch face sharing, because yeah. it's not very useful otherwise.
Make that an app. But yeah, I found that it's like, it's kind of tedious. But it's cool. It's not one that I've used, since installing the release of WatchOS 7, but I think Felipe, our colleague, has. I've seen him post pictures of using it.
I think it's a perfectly fine addition to have. It's not for me, but it's good to be in the lineup.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
What about the Memoji face?
Memoji
so this
face.
One is a 3D, it like renders in real time your Memoji or any Memoji that you want. And they've even added a full Memoji editor app on the watch so that
yeah,
you can
that part
make your Memojis directly.
Kind of neat that you can do Memojis on the watch. Memojis on the watch. The face itself is like, I played around with it, and my first Memoji in the lineup was a Santa Claus that I made. And so then I had the Christmas watch face, and it's like, oh, there's Santa on my watch face. It's not a bad watch face. It's fun and playful. I can totally see people using it. I think in the Verge review today, they were like, don't use your own face as your emoji. It's creepy. Whatever you like to do. It doesn't talk or anything, and it kind of feels like you should like tap it and make it interact with you, like a little Tamagotchi type thing.
Yeah, it does. It does like react to your taps by moving around, but there's no like, you know, there's no memory or sounds or anything.
Right.
It just does this.
I will say this. It made me want to make a Memoji that I've made one of myself, and I've made one of Santa, and like those are the two custom ones that I've made that are an emoji. It made me want to be like, well, I wonder like what creative creature I could do to like just be like a cute watch face, you know, and be like, you know, but not have my face or have Santa's face. Like I think it's more fun if you do something creative, that isn't you. I think it'll be pretty popular. I think a lot of people will use it, not me. The thing that I like about it is that it's a whole new style of layout, in that instead of having the time in the top right corner and the Memoji or Animoji, as like the background of the main focus of the watch face, it's centered. You have the time centered, you have complications centered, and that's not a style that you can do on like the Photos watch face or the Motion watch face. Like those could be, but they're not.
Yeah, because all the digital time faces have the time in the top right.
Right, exactly. So it's kind of neat looking. I mean, it's a different layout from any other watch face, from a digital watch face. Yeah, it's pretty cool. I think the benefit of having it in the top right is that, like, if you're wearing a sleeve, you can have it like half covered and see the time. That's a benefit. Mm-hmm. But having it be centered is it looks good. And so
they should offer that kind of layout for other faces, like the Photos face.
Yeah, and it'd be one of the
complications.
Yeah, one of the things when you lay out your complications, you know, mm-hmm. or pick them, then you can choose like where they are, even left, right. You know, I mean, to have it on the other side. But that's the neat part. But you customize like not just the Animoji or Memoji, but like the color of the background. So they did a good job on this watch face.
It's a great tech demo that you can like 3D render that on the watch.
Yeah, yeah.
It's clearly meant for kids, right? Like
I think my daughter, so she's got the Series 3. I don't think she'll be able to use this watch face. I haven't checked yet. But like she would love having the unicorn. Because she loves the unicorn Animoji anyway, and unicorns in general. So like having that, I think she'd like to have on her watch face. So
okay, then there's the typograph face, which is typography. And that's kind of like numerals, basically, but with some different font options. Is that a fair summary?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's an analog face.
Yeah, I like typography. It's nice. It's understated, simple, fine.
Is it the few font options are different enough that I think it's pretty dynamic. So
yeah, and that's one of the ones they keep using as like the poster image for the Apple Watch Series 6 is the Typograph face with the serif font. Because it does look different, yeah. And it kind of reminds me of the Nike watch face.
It kind of reminds me of, like, if not really the Hermes faces, but, like, that style of, like, high fashion, you know. And when you make the numerals look different, like, they can look more modern and not, like, fancy. But, you know, it just depends on which one you use. But I like the way it looks.
Mm-hmm.
I don't use it, but I like the way it looks.
Count up face?
Count up is a watch face. Like there's this whole category of watch faces where it's like it's really an app integrated into a watch face. Like Chronograph is a stopwatch.
Mm-hmm.
So is Count Up. Like it's not a timer counting.
There is
down.
A lot of overlap.
Yeah, it's not a countdown timer. It's Count Up because you are running a stopwatch. It's more integrated than. Like Chronograph in a way because like it pulls up this whole other UI on top of your watch face to like start and stop your timer.
Big buttons.
Yeah. It's like you activate this app within your watch face. You have the hour hand, minute hand, second hand. You get a fourth hand, which is like your timer and the indices around the dial for each minute, they count up and you get more of those. Makes sense. You can run this thing when you're in the always on watch face on a Series 5 or 6. When you're resting the watch, it will summarize, it'll round down to the nearest next minute. So like if you're like a minute and a half on your timer, or not timer, but stopwatch, it'll say 1 minute in gray. It won't update from what I've seen to 2 minutes in resting. It updates whenever you like raise your wrists and, you know, activate it. So that's kind of a flaw in that because it's not accurate and there's no reason it shouldn't be able to. But it's a stopwatch. And the thing that, and that's fine. Like I ran it for like 4 hours and I was trying to see what happens visually. You know, it keeps running and you can even change the watch face to another watch face and it doesn't kill the process. It's still counting up. When you go back to it, you can even run the stopwatch app and the Count Up watch face to have two stopwatches running simultaneously. The big question is they have these circles around the dials and they don't do anything. They're just white circles. You customize the ring color with lots of different color options, but the circles are just there for they're just visual. And to me, they remind me of like, a rotary dial telephone when you pull the dial around to put in your numbers, but like there's no interaction with them unless
it looks like they should like fill up to show hours or something, right?
That's why I ran a 4 hour timer. Was I was like, okay, how many of these bubbles will I fill up, and then I'll understand what they're for. But they don't do that.
They're just static circles.
Maybe they're inspired by something in the analog watch world that I don't know about, but it's purely
because
I
think the face looks fine apart from the circles, and unfortunately. Mm-hmm. The customization for the face does not let you turn off the circles.
That's true. So Count Up, not for me. If you love to run stopwatches, then it's going to be a cool face for you.
And then you've got GMT face, which is showing multiple time zones on the screen at once.
Yeah, GMT. So the reference there is
Greenwich Mean Time.
Greenwich Mean Time, which is like the default time zone for the planet. Well, I guess there's UTC.
Yeah, I mean... GMT and UTC are basically the same thing.
Okay. So that's like default time zone for Earth. And so that's what GMT references in this name. What the watch face is, what it does is it basically lets you see, you know, your current time where you are, and then you can customize this fourth watch hand, which is like this red hand with a big circle, like reminds you of like a railroad track or something, like a railroad clock. You know what I mean? And that will show the time that you're tracking another time zone. So you can see your current time and another time zone's time.
Yeah, and you just twist the crown and it lets you pick a different time zone.
Yeah. So you can even do your current time zone as like the second one. So then your hand, the red hand moves with the hand. You can do none if you'd want to like not track any other time zone and just have it be the style of watch face. You have the dial is two-toned. You can pick a lot of colors. So visually it's pretty dynamic. And I think the colored one is probably AM and the dark one's PM. I haven't really, well, yeah.
Yeah, that looks right. That looks right from what I'm looking at right now.
Yeah. So I think colored's PM and the dark one's AM. Cause I'm looking at, I have London as my time zone and it shows 8:20. and it's in the colored red part of at least this configuration of color. And then it's relying on the minutes, to be the same between time zones. I haven't tried what it does because some time zones are like half an hour off. I haven't tried what those do or if they're even an option because you've got a set list of options.
I think the bright red is your daytime hours and then the dark ring is for your nighttime hours. Yeah. So that doesn't change based on the one that you set. That's just constant for you.
Okay. And you can't pick time zone. Like, there are time zones. I'm not crazy that have half-hour differences between
each other. Oh, yeah. There's a lot more time zones than the ones that it lets you choose from.
Yeah. And so that doesn't let you pick any time zone. It's just the ones that they have. So there's no... Because it relies on the minute hand being the same as your time zone, they don't have any of those half-hour time zones. But I think visually it's very neat. I've got mine... Like having London be in the middle of the watch face, I'm not sure I love that. I wouldn't mind having that be hidden. Just having LON in the middle of it, like meh. But you know, you get the four corner complications, and you get to pick the color of your dial. It's a cool one. I'm actually like, this is one I would use and have kind of been using since the.
Yeah, I think GM. This is the best one of the new set.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
just the in GMT. Terms of functionality, interest, visual, visual pristine quality to it.
Yeah.
The worst one of the new set is called Artist.
Yeah.
Do you want to describe the Artist face?
Well, what I'll say about Artist is that, let's see, this is an Apple's own word, so I don't make anyone mad here. Let me go to the watch app and describe it. It's a face, and they use the nose of the face, like it's a human face. And they use the human nose of the human face to be the divider between the hour and minute. And those are the eyes of the human face, the hour and minute.
Yeah, so the hours is like the left eye and then the minutes is the right eye. And it's like this abstract painting, almost like Picasso style abstract face representation.
If you've seen the Mac App Store art, it's that style of like really weird, simplistic, abstract
people. Yeah, it's not a cartoon, but it's like... very simple shape faces, and you tap on the watch face and it changes to a different one.
Yeah, there's no customization because you can't have a complication. You can't like go through the customization picker and like pick which face you want. It has an always on mode, so it's just like it just becomes like an outline of the face in time when you use series 5 or 6 and it's dimmed. In the keynote, they say that it changes when you raise your wrist, but in practice, what we've seen so far is it changes when you tap the watch face, and that's like that's how you customize it, basically, is you tap the watch face and to pick the face that you want.
And it does smoothly transition from one, like, color swatch to another, and the face moves around, the nose moves around, the hair moves around, like, but I just, look, maybe there's some people that think it's cool. I just think all the faces just look either silly or they just look really depressed. Like, I don't know why... you'd want to look at that all day long.
Yeah,
it's really hard to tell the time on it, too.
this is Apple's description. Artist. Created in collaboration with artist Jeff McFetridge, this watch is a dynamic piece of art that's unique to Apple Watch. Yes, it is. Every time you raise your wrist, the portrait algorithmically changes, and there are millions of combinations. So it seems like it might be buggy that it's supposed to change the face and just doesn't. But, yeah... when they showed it in the keynote, it's like, that's out there. Like, that's... there's no other face like it.
It's like, if they had a third-party watch face store, it would be in the watch face store, right? Like,
yeah, and that'd be totally
but they
cool.
don't have a watch face store. Oh. It's a very weird, in my opinion, built-in option. Like, I'm all for diversity and creativity, but I think this is just... misses the mark.
What I want to know, because it's not for me, it's not for you, is... I think I've seen like one person on Twitter who likes maybe two people. So if there's anyone listening or watching that likes it, tell us your feelings about it because it's got to be for somebody. The fact that it's called Artist too and like not like a specific name, like Artist should be a category of watch faces, you know?
Yeah.
Like, this is a really cool concept, this idea. But it should be like named after the artist or like named abstract or something like that, you know?
Yeah, or like there's different options. So one of them's the abstract faces. Then there's just like Picasso paintings or scenery that's, you know, like oil paintings. Like make it like a fuller, more complete option because I don't think the cosmetic styling or aesthetics of that artist is clearly very divisive in what in their
there should be a Salvador Dali watch face. You know what that is?
Yeah.
Like the melting watch face, the melting clock pictures.
That'd be cool. That would be cool.
Yeah. I went to
it. I mean, at least it's different, right? But it's not. I won't be using it. Let's put it that way.
Now I want a melting clock watch face.
And Series 6 comes in new colors. So you can get a blue one, which
that's
looks
the
really
big
cool.
New feature, is that there's
you can colors. Get a product red one, like a proper red case, not just a red band.
It's been rumored for a long time.
And they've got new bands to go along with the colors as well. They've got this brand new solo loop band, which is really cool. It's just like one continuous piece of like silicone. And that's it. Like, there's no buckle, there's no clasp. You just, like, I guess it's just stretchy. So you just put it on your wrist and it clamps down onto your arm.
Yeah, it's a different material than fluoroelastomer. So it's not going to feel like a sport band. It looks just like a sport band, but without any of the holes. You know, the Nike band is like holes everywhere. There's perforation everywhere. This is that there's no pen and there's no loop and tuck, none of that. From a usability perspective, I think that's very cool because I've seen people with motor skills, that aren't compatible with using the sport loop, which is like the default loop, or band. And the Velcro style is like, it helps that because you just kind of like put it on. If you like hand a family, like an older family member, the sport band, it's counterintuitive how you put it on, you know, how you tuck it in versus like, you know, it's kind of weird how you do it. You get used to it. But this material, the change there is that it's just like one, it looks the same as like the fluoroelastomer material sport band, but it's just one continuous thing. The tricky part is that you have to measure your wrist with a printout or at least, you know, measure it with something to know how many inches your wrist is.
Yeah. Cause it's so precisely.
There's seven sizes.
I think there's nine sizes.
Nine sizes, okay.
Yeah, nine sizes, seven color options.
Okay, so
that's a lot of bands,
and that's part of the product name is like which size it is on Apple.com. So it's
and because like
buy.
This band could be a candidate for like a new default band, right? But the
but
fact that
it cannot be,
it cannot be because it's so like pernickety about which size your wrist is that
yeah,
and you're not gonna. I don't think you're really gonna want to. Buy it sight unseen either, because like ideally if you could you just like walk into a store and try it on, but we know what the environment for that is at the moment.
Yeah,
so
make an appointment if your store is even open.
Yeah.
And they're only at Apple because of this nine size seven colors thing. You know, it would be nuts to have these stocked, I guess, at Best Buy, and they kind of want that exclusivity, so it's only at Apple as a band, which is the first for Apple bands.
And to multiply the number of combinations even more, they also have braided solo loop, which has, you know, umpteen sizes.
I think
colors.
These look very cool, and like where the I'll learn these names eventually, but where the sport and the infinite sport band
yeah.
is like
solo loop.
Yeah, where that one is like, oh, it looks like a modified version of the sport band. Like, it's simpler. You can see like this being like a Johnny Ive, you know, the first love from design for Apple, kind of thing. And it's like, you know, but it's like a version of an existing band. Whereas the braided version looks way different. Like, there's nothing like it. It doesn't look like yeah. the woven nylon bands. It doesn't look like the sport loop Velcro bands. So I like this one a lot. What I don't like about it is that it's $100 and it does not look like a $100 band to me. I mean, they're all priced to be Apple bands, you know, $50 is the base, but it doesn't look like a $100 band, like Leather Loop is and the other ones, Melanie's Loop, for example.
Yeah. And then they have some new colors for Nike and stuff. Like the big news on the band side is definitely the solar loop and braided bands.
Yeah.
Right?
If you've got, Milanese, the watch color for gold changes where it's like more yellow than rosy. Because they used to have gold and rose gold, and then they had new gold, which is like a kind of a rosy yellow gold, like a mix of the two. And now they've got a new gold that is more yellowy than rosy. And they've changed the color of the gold Milanese loop. And they've gotten rid of space black.
I can't believe they got rid of space black.
Yeah, space black, which has been around since the first watch, is now exclusive to Hermes, which last year it was the first time you could get an Hermes space black watch. Now it's only Hermes.
It's graduating.
Yeah,
and it's gonna be an Apple Fellow band soon.
And now it's graphite. Is that the name of it?
Yeah, it's called graphite.
Yeah, and so the Milanese loop changes too from space black to graphite. So that's it's still is it still DLC where it's like a diamond light coating is the material?
Yeah, it's like a grey color though, so it's not like dark black.
Yeah,
it's not as nice, I don't think.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah. I haven't bought one of the Space Black ones since the Series 2, but I did think it was very cool. So, oh well. I'm definitely curious to see, like, how does the new graphite look in comparison? And it's all right to have new colors. But, you know, you mentioned the red and the blue for the aluminum models. That makes the aluminum models, I think it's really cool. They got rid of ceramic, which is not cool. There's still titanium, which is unchanged from last year. Those are the additions of Series 6. But to have like the newest looking watch, you have to get the lower price models aluminum, which is probably, I mean, it's gotta be the most popular anyway.
Yeah.
But the product red one, like, I think you can only buy it with red variation bands, but you can obviously use it with any other kind of band. That one, it was Mecca Dakar that had like the report, like maybe 9 months ago that it was coming soon. And they saved it for Series 6, obviously. That one is like probably what I would buy because it looks the most different. The blue one is cool, and it's neat that they did a blue one as they're rumored to do a blue navy iPhone. And it is like navy. Like it, you could confuse it for slate from the iPhone 5, which as we discussed in this podcast is like, we like that color. But it looks, as the reviews have come out and the hands on, it looks more like, you know, a blue tone of the space gray watches that already exist.
Yes.
So it's not that different. The red one is like the one that pops. It's like, that's a totally different watch, you know?
Yeah, the red one looks really cool.
Yeah, it does look really cool. I think pairing the red one with like a black band would be really cool.
Is this where you want to bemoan that your favorite material is gone?
Yeah, I mean, I've got the ceramic Series 5. If I don't know, I mean, if I had a non-ceramic watch from Series 5, I would upgrade to this watch because I've had every watch every year. And I love to kind of like seek out, you know, what are the changes year over year? Because it's ceramic, they didn't make a new ceramic one. I wouldn't go from ceramic to ceramic anyway, but there's, you know, it's kind of a win for me because it makes the Series 5 ceramic that much more exclusive.
Yeah. You've got the rare one now.
Yeah. It's super rare now. And so even though it's not the newest one, I mean, this happened between Series 3 and 4. They had ceramic Series 2 and 3, in white, and they didn't have a ceramic Series 4. They had a ceramic Series 5. So I can be perfectly happy with my Series 5 watch. And, you know, like, I love that it's white. Like, if they made like a white plasticky one, like polycarbonate, I'd like that, you know, if it was the cheap one.
So, yeah, like, the ceramic is, like, I've never owned a ceramic, but I've seen it, obviously, and it's by far the best looking case. Like,
yeah,
the white ceramic is, maybe it's not the most practical in the chips and stuff, but, and it's expensive, but you look at it and you're like, that is slick. That is really cool.
Yeah.
Right? I don't get that same impression when I look at like the gold ones, right? Like, I don't have the same connection with gold, like, as jewelry. It's just too much like jewelry to me, right? Like, I don't get it, but white ceramic and it's just like pearly white.
Yeah, surfaces. That's that pearly part that makes it. It's not just like a flat color or a matte, or, you know, it's.
So I'm sad to see it's gone again.
I'm not, because it's one less thing to worry about upgrading for. And the fact that the stainless steel colors are slightly different in graphite and the same for stainless steel, and then the titanium, those two are the same as well. If I were buying, I would totally want to buy one of the new colors. So it would be between blue and red, and I'd probably go for red.
Yeah.
You know.
And so the Series 6 is the same price. It's $399. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you about Sun Basket, and then cool. We can talk about the Apple Watch SE. Want to skip the grocery store? With more of us avoiding outdoor trips than ever before, Sun Basket is a great way to eat delicious, healthy food without having to leave the house. Get Sunbasket fresh and ready meals delivered to you each week. Sunbasket meals are made with organic fresh produce, sustainable seafood, and using meat that is free of antibiotics, hormones, and steroids. Their chefs have won Michelin stars and a James Beard Award. So why not take the night off and let them cook for you? Try delicious meals such as pappardelle pasta with wilted spinach, sweet peas and fresh ricotta, or southern western turkey and sweet potato skillet, or maybe cauliflower macaroni and cheese. Meals come freshly prepared. There's no recipe to follow or prep needed. Put them straight in the oven and they heat up in as little as 6 minutes. It's incredibly convenient. All you have to do is heat and eat, which means no mess in your kitchen and far less cleanup than a traditional prepared meal. Sunbasket also has paleo, vegetarian, Mediterranean, and gluten-free options to check out as well. Right now, Sunbasket is offering $35 off your order when you go to sunbasket.com/happyhour and enter promo code happyhour, all one word, at checkout. That's sunbasket.com/happyhour and enter promo code happyhour at checkout for $35 off your order. sunbasket.com/happyhour and enter promo code happyhour.
You know, I did price out a watch earlier today. That's like the hands-on ones are showing up, and I'm like, yeah, it's kind of cool. And I got to it. It's like, I don't want the 40 millimeter for me. I want the 44 millimeter. And, you know, I don't want GPS only. I want cellular. So it becomes like a $530 watch plus tax. And so it's like, oh, that's a kind of a lot of money to go from ceramic. So it's an easy pass. Hopefully I'll get one to review though. So we'll see, you know, from Apple. So we'll see what happens there. Let's talk about family setup.
Yeah, this is cool. So they kind of said that they want to make the watch even more accessible to even more people. This is leading up to the SE hardware, obviously. But they announced the family setup first stuff, which again dates back to our reporting about there being like a kids mode. Yep. And a lot of this stuff that we said here is what we've been asking for on Happy Hour for ages, like a way for an adult to set up a second watch or a watch for, you know, a kid or someone or even an older grandparent who doesn't actually own an iPhone. And it's called family setup. You can specify like what contacts they're allowed to communicate with. You can get location notifications, and they even have now customizable activity rings. This is family setup and anyone. They include it in the family setup section, but you can do it on your own watch. So if you have, you know, different activity or different daily fitness schedules, and you're not going to fit into the usual 30 minute time frame or 12 stand hours.
You've always been able to change your move ring, which is your active calories burned. Yep. You can now change your stand hours. So that's standing for 1 minute out of X number of different hours. The default's 12. You can go as low as 6 now. And then the exercise ring, you can decrease or increase for the first time ever. 30 minutes is like the global recommended. You can go down to 10 and up to 60. So you can do up to an hour. I think that's pretty cool. I mean, you could always like double your rings and, you know, not complete your rings. But if you really want to push yourself and you can say, I want 60 minutes of exercise, you know, 12 hours is all you're going to get for stand, and then whatever your move ring is. Or if you're just, you know, if you've got a different use case and like it's a goal to get 10 minutes of exercise and the ring completing it is fulfilling to you, then you can do that. I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, and if you're doing it for a kid, that you can actually activate a school time mode, which puts on Do Not Disturb, it reduces distractions, and it even makes the kid use a special watch face, which is like bright yellow. So if a teacher walks past...
Like a school bus.
Yeah, if a teacher walks past, they can be like, okay, he's not going to cheat or be distracted or whatever. He's got the school time mode on. That's the idea of it. So like, you get this like bright yellow warning that you can see from across
and
the room.
It's clever because it is an analog watch face with numerals around the dial, so you can learn to tell time with it. But it also has a digital watch as like the center complication. So and I guess the date. So it's kind of, you know, we saw people, adults that are like, I like the infograph face, but I want to know what time it is. And so they put a digital clock in the face. Doing that on the school time face is clever because you get both.
I think so. Family setup. Yeah, it sounds exactly like what we asked for, right? Customized activity rings.
Yeah, no downsides at all.
No downsides at all. Oh wait, okay. It requires a cellular watch, but not just any cellular watch. It has to be Series 4 or later. Yeah. And it only works on select carrier partners. A lot of carriers, but not all, and not all countries. So if you just have like an iPhone on any plan, like separately, and you've got this watch, you can't use it. If you've got a Wi-Fi only watch that you were maybe just wanted to give to your kid as an activity tracker, like your hang-me-down Fitbit, instead of getting a Fitbit.
Kids controlling the lights in my office. So we would think that the requirement would be watchOS 7, which means Series 3 or higher.
Right.
Any model GPS or GPS plus cellular. It's not that. It's Apple Watch Series 4 or higher with cellular. And you've got to use cellular. So at least have it activated. And we get the carrier thing that you've got to have number sync be a thing that works, or the equivalent of that.
Yeah, because it would be a separate phone number to the iPhone's phone number.
So. Yeah, what's annoying is that it can't be like my daughter's Series 3, which has cellular. I mean, she has an iPhone, but I wouldn't mind like putting her in this. I don't think I can put her in the kids mode, you know, like,
yeah,
and,
yeah,
and have that whole thing.
I have like a grandparent who would, you know, he'd probably like to just be able to see his activity rings every day. And then, you know, if he's on Wi-Fi in the house, I can send him a text message. We can talk over FaceTime audio. He doesn't want a cellular plan.
Like an iPad or
yeah, exactly,
iPod.
Like an iPad that you strap on your watch, right? And I've never had a cellular watch. I only have used the Wi-Fi only one. Yes, it communicates with my phone for data every now and again, but standalone, it's perfectly fine as a fitness device, and you can put music on it. You can load music onto it to play if you're just going out for a run. Like, so I'd love to just be able to like hand that off and say, here, use this. But no, you've got to commit to having a cellular watch and pay for the plan on it. Like, I feel like it's pretty limited in that way.
Yeah, I mean, the whole plan thing is, it's... I get it in terms of like location sharing and actually making phone calls and text messages and SOS and all that stuff. The best case scenario is that you have it, but I don't think it should be required because Wi-Fi is in so many places. If it's just home and school, connect to the Wi-Fi at school and at home.
Yeah.
And it's the in between that's like, okay, you made it from point A to B. We don't know in between, but you know, that'd be fine, I think, but they didn't do that. They went with this way and it's kind of frustrating. And to me, like a Series 4, I didn't keep one. Series 5, I'm keeping it, but this one won't go to my daughter. You know, it's like, no, it's not.
Yeah,
And so, I mean, we'll get to the Apple Watch SE, but like that's mainly the one that is kind of the target for this mode. It's, you know, they still sell Series 3 and it doesn't work with this. And it's like, okay, there's a watch for $199 and it doesn't work with kids mode. There's one for $280 and you have to have the $330 version of it to use kids mode. You're not quite heading this in the
right
way. And you
have to commit to the cellular plan. Like, yeah, at that point, are there many parents who are going to be like, here, use this watch versus we'll just buy you an iPhone, like an iPhone SE or something?
Yeah. A cell plan, today, without this family setup, you've got to have the phone cell plan and the watch cell plan. So the phone plan is probably another $30 in your bill, maybe 20. The watch is like 10 plus taxes. In this case, you get by on just having the $10 phone, you know, for the phone bill for the watch. So it's certainly a benefit compared to now, but it's weird.
Like, it feels like a niche, like. Especially when the Apple Watch SE is not $199, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. When it's, I mean, effectively for family setup, it's a $330 watch for your kid,
which is
or your grandparents.
Basically the price of the original Apple Watch, like,
yeah,
which was not considered available to, which you would never have considered given to kids, right? So like, maybe this is a long-term plan and eventually the Apple Watch SE will get to $199 and then it all starts to make a lot more sense. But as it stands right, you know, here today, it doesn't
like when we discussed this feature as like something that we think is an obvious next step for Apple Watch, we never said, and you got to have LTE. And
yeah, we never added the cellular restriction.
Yeah, and it can't be a watch that runs the software, but not this feature, you know? Like, yeah. I'm really curious I just want to play with this mode of the watch because it's neat and different, but I don't have the right hardware here to do that. So,
So Apple Watch SE.
Let me talk about what I like about it. The watch itself, which we'll get to in a second, I think it's awesome. The price is high. It'll get lower. It'll be on sale. Okay.
Yeah.
And you get a lot for the low, like the medium priced watch. I hate the name. SE. Like, you know, Series 1 and 2 was like, you had Apple Watch, which they called like Sport Apple Watch and Apple Watch Edition. You had Apple Watch Series 1 and 2, and that was clever because Series 1 was just a faster version of the first-gen watch with the same chip as the Series 2, which was like the new watch. And by having a second-gen thing be called Series 1, like, it was really clever. And since then, you've had Series 3, 4, 5, 6. So SE was kind of a challenge of like, what do you name it? And you could do like Series 6 and Series 7 this year, and so you still got like new watches, but it's a kind of a mix of like, is Series 6 really better than 4 if you use that naming? And not necessarily. But I think SE, like, this is the best SE product in Apple's lineup, because when the 5S became an SE, like, it was dated compared to a 6S phone that it was inside. Same thing for the iPhone SE today, which is an iPhone 6 looking phone with, you know, in the age of like an iPhone 10. this is like the look like the current watch, you know.
It's very modern.
Yeah, you're going to be very hard to, it's hard to determine what is a Series 4, 5, 6 or SE. Like, they're all the full screen design. So I don't like the SE name for it, but oh well. I think otherwise it's a pretty good product.
Yeah, cuz it's basically a Series 4 watch that doesn't have always on display or ECG.
Mhm.
Yes, yeah. That's the only qualification.
Yeah, which Series 4 didn't have always on display, and ECG, right. It lacks that. And that's one of those features where, like, me and you are like, you know, take it or leave it. It has a lot of
We were talking about an hour ago, mm-hmm. you scan once, you're like, I'm all right, then you forget about it. It's like, yeah.
And it's great when you have to have it, but I mean, you're still getting, like, as far as I know, you get all of the, you get fall detection? Like, you can
Fall detection's on Apple Watch SE.
Yeah, it's way better than Series 3 in terms of, like, the design. And even the health features, you know, like passive heart rate alert, stuff like that, they might not get with Series 3. And I mean, it's pretty good for, like, I mean, this is kind of like the default watch now, and, like, Series 6 is kind of more premium.
Like, say if I was upgrading my Apple Watch this year, and the Apple Watch SE had the always-on display, I'd probably buy that instead of the Series 6. Like,
yeah.
I don't really care about the ECG, to be honest, and I don't really care about the blood oxygen sensor. Like, the only thing that separates it for me, really, is the no always on. Like,
yeah.
If I'm going to, because I've got Series 4 watch at the moment, when I do upgrade the watch, which probably next year.
What chip's inside?
It's the same as the S5. It's the same as the Series 4, which is the same as the Series 5. It's that chip.
Okay. So it's really not a big deal at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not the 20% faster chip. It's not the S6, but it's, you know, going to be perfectly fine.
Yeah. This is a great first watch, and it's a great upgrade from Series 3 and earlier. You know, if you've got Series 4, it's kind of lateral. And if you've got Series 5, it's a downgrade, but you don't, I mean, if you got Series 5, stick with it.
Yeah. And it is a shame they couldn't push the price down a bit more, like $279 for GPS, $329 for cellular. Like, it's high. And they didn't reduce Series 3 price. It's still $199. So it's like, a lot of people are probably going to still buy Series 3 just because it's $80 cheaper. And when you're talking about a $200 product, that's quite a big jump up. But
soon
enough,
price.
Maybe by, you know, March, maybe they can phase out Series 3 even partway through the year and just push the Series, push the SE to like $229 or something, right? Like,
I just hate the name.
Yeah.
I really do. It feels so like dated and dusty.
Yeah, it's not their best, not their best showing, but who knows when Apple will come up with a great name. That is their current Achilles heel, is naming.
Yeah.
The other interesting thing in the watch section was they talked about the environment, and they're using 100% recycled rare earth and tungsten in the Tapton engine. But what this segment was centered around was the fact that they're not including the USB power adapter with the watches anymore, at least the low-end watches. So they said that we know customers have been accumulating USB power adapters, producing unneeded adapters adds to our carbon footprint. And so they said we're no longer including the power adapter in the Apple Watch, citing environmental concerns.
I love environmental stuff. I hate this move. They say that they will, Tim will say data like, you know, watch customers are majority first-time buyers, so you're not accumulating adapters in that scenario. If you're buying an iPhone, you have been. You can share it, but you can't charge simultaneously overnight. That's kind of lame. And if you buy a new phone this year, you can't. You know, like, accumulating, yeah, because you've been providing them in the box, but now you can't. Now you're not going to accumulate. Like, it's just, it's not cool at all. Like, I hope that they reverse this decision. It's very, very dumb and bad. I love the environmental stuff, but not this.
And this is clearly the framing they're going to use next month when they do the same thing with the iPhone.
Right, which is also very dumb and bad, especially for those prices. Right.
And the biggest thing that I think twists in their back here is that the titanium and the Hermes watches still come with a power adapter. So it's like, the cheap ones, the ones where they're trying to save money, don't have the power adapter, but the expensive watches still do. Mm-hmm. It's like,
yeah, I've never been mad about a Tim Cook Apple, you know, thing is like, oh, you're changing for the worse. But this is one where it's like, this can't be the new normal.
And they still charge the same price for the power adapter from the Apple store. Like, if it's an environmental thing, they should let you like check out and say, do you want a power adapter? Yes or no? And they'll just include it with you when you buy it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or like, we'll sell it at cost. Right. If they, 'cause the power adapters do not cost them $15. Like, that's probably $10 a profit easy, right? Like, so for $4.99, I would have no complaints, right? I get it, right?
But well, next have, month like, they're going to... compelling first-party dock, you know, and they've got the $80 dock that's not compelling at all. Yeah. And they've got a bunch of third-party ones that are just expensive.
And next month, they're going to do the same thing with their phone where they say, we noticed customers have been accumulating AirPods and power chargers. So what we're going to do is just not include them anymore, but then deal with it. And then, if you actually want those things, it'll cost you $60 to buy them from the Apple
Store. We've noticed customers have been accumulating lots of photos. So we're going to take away the camera.
Why don't we charge... Like, it just feels like something that they're just trying to eke out some money on.
I think it's unfair and dishonest to put Lisa Jackson, the environmental, you know, executive, up and on a use the environment, however much that, you know, you can actually like measure that to make a cosplay.
If customers have been acquiring power adapters endlessly, then they don't just sell them anymore because we've already got them. Uh-huh. So just don't sell them. That'll just save the environment. Yeah. But they're not going to do that. They're still selling them at $15 each. Like, that's where the argument just falls apart.
There's no changing how the watch charges. It charges what's the change now? Like 2.5, it's like 20% faster is what they say.
Yeah.
So SE and Series 6 charge 20% faster, as long as you have your own charger to charge it with. Otherwise, you can't charge it at all. But you can't do like Qi charging, for example. And I think that would be a nice move. It's like, we know that customers have chargers and they prefer to multi-chargers. And they've got these Qi mats that we sell and everyone sells. But you can't do that. It's got to be a puck still. So no good on this one. This needs to change, you know, yesterday.
Unfortunate. That's like a bad point.
Yes.
Not the environment. Not Apple clearly cares about the environment, but using the environment as this excuse here is just... I'd be less upset if they just hadn't mentioned it and just didn't associate with the environment at all.
Me too. Yeah, me too. When do you do this with Macs? Like, we know customers have USB-C everywhere and, you know.
I know. Like, it's a silly argument. It's a silly point.
And the packaging, like, it looks the same this year. You just don't have the brick.
So on a happier note, Fitness Plus.
Love it.
Exactly. Yeah. Their latest service in their infinite lineup of services. Mm-hmm. That Jay Blahnik introduced. It's the first time we've seen Jay Blahnik in a while.
This is a better service than News Plus.
Yep. And he called this the first fitness service designed around the Apple Watch.
Oh, yeah.
And it's essentially you get workout classes from instructors on a weekly basis. And then the Apple twist is that when you're actually watching these workouts, it synchronizes with your watch. So all of your health metrics appear as little overlays over the top of the video. And if the instructors are saying like you need to keep your pace up, it can specifically show pace metrics. If you complete your activity rings, they're in the corner and they show your rewards and your achievements. If it's like, you know, we're going to get a heart rate up to 90 beats per minute, it will show your current heart rate on the screen.
It's awesome. It's
amazing. I think this is great. Like, yes.
It shows on the iPhone, on the iPad, on the Apple TV. Like, this made the Apple TV so much better for me in terms of, like, it's a product compared to a stick, you know? It's like, oh, this is the box for that, you know, on the TV, which is awesome.
Like, and just like GymKit, if you start a workout video on any of these devices, it automatically starts the corresponding workout on your watch. Like,
so
you don't have to fiddle about and click on different things. It'll be perfectly in sync. You can have different people come up to the TV. It'll just know it's the person's watch that's nearby. Just immediately synchronize. And it just beams your metrics to the screen. And, like, they're going to add new videos every week. They made a big song and dance about how they, you know, spanning the categories. They got yoga, cycling, dance, treadmill, strength, high-intensity interval training, rowing, you know. And they even said they've got a beginner program. So if you're brand new to fitness, they're going to have very basic things that can get you warmed up and in the zone.
Yeah.
And they have integration with Apple Music. So the workouts will be accompanied by music. And there'll be many different genres and moods. And if you're like after the workout's over, if you want to go back and find the music, there'll be the playlist in the Apple Music app for you to keep for later that you can, you know, do while you're working out or just if you just want to listen to it. Like, mm-hmm. It seems really well done where News Plus clearly wasn't. Like, the TV even the app seems really good. Like TV Plus content is pretty good.
There's like no gacha on this. I mean, the only gacha is that you got to pay for it, but you get free for 3 months with a new watch purchase, which is cool. And also, I mean, it's, you're competing with like Peloton. I think you pay like $40 a month for if you have the hardware, or you can pay like, I think as low as 12 for the digital only subscription with you use your own hardware. Mm-hmm. You know, and I don't think there's like a live element to this, whereas with Peloton, there is a live like class schedule element to it. I think it's all on demand. But
you could definitely see them expanding into live classes and stuff in the future.
Yeah, everyone's located in LA. I've determined that's where the studio is in Culver City or LA. So that's one time zone. So that'd be tricky to do live with. But it's really cool. There's 21 trainers. I've looked at each one because they say like celebrity trainers are like trainers that you may be familiar with. And I don't think a lot of us were familiar with any of them. But in looking them up, like, they are people that you can Google and learn things about. And there's some really cool stuff there. Like, one trainer, a lot of them they hired from Equinox, including SoulCycle, which is owned by Equinox. Like, the majority come from there. Some had their own programs. And so they were hired for their, you know, being known from that. Some were like Nike training app trainers. One was a Nordic Track iFit training program instructor, which is like, you know, it's like a Peloton competitor. So, really neat stuff. And the diversity of the people, like there's, you know, there's some diversity in age. There's a lot in gender is pretty split up in race. One guy is a pro surfer turned yoga instructor. I'm going to do a story pretty soon on this, but this is what I've collected so far. There's one person who is an amputee, and so he lost his leg in a motorcycle accident. So I don't like that part about the story, the motorcycle bit, but the fact that he is a trainer who is an amputee is really cool. And he's from Iran. That's neat. So there's a lot of cool stuff there, but the service itself looks so good. What is it, like $10 a month or $80 a year?
Yeah.
And that's with you and anyone in your family sharing. So it's up to 6 people, you and 5 others. Or it's included in the Apple One bundle Premier for $30 a month, which we'll talk about in a second. I think this is a hit. And like, I've certainly wrote about how, you know, with the watch, you get the workout app and all the different workout types. And me, I've found myself doing workouts on different machines because it's part of the watch and I want to like test it and review it and get that experience. And that makes me comfortable with that machine. But some of the stuff like high intensity interval training, you know, all of the weight stuff, you know, strength training, much of yoga stuff. It's like, you don't just get on a machine and like, you know, keep your heart rate at a certain level and burn so many calories. There's a lot more to it. And this is like the instructions for that, you know, like the other half of what is the workout app, you know?
Yeah. And they said they're going to offer like personalization. So the workouts can be recommended for, you know, what you do based on your previous activity. And obviously they're going to add new videos every single week. So it's pretty good frequency of updates there. The only thing I would say is and look, this service is really good, but immediately when they said a workout fitness program designed for the Apple Watch, all the current workouts that they're showing, they're all in studio, right? So they expect you to be like in front of the TV or on a treadmill, right? Like,
there's basically no audio only.
Right, exactly. Because when I think of, you know, doing fitness with the Apple Watch, loads of people put AirPods in their ear and they go for a run. And I think a very clear extension for where this could go is audio workouts, where you get music that you're listening to, and then you have like the trainers going in your ear, like, and also live things. But I think the live classes will come, right? They can do live classes.
Yeah, those are obvious places to expand. That's a good point. When we were talking about like this as an idea before it was announced, we're like, the music aspect will be a big deal, and they're doing that where they charge you $10 a month, you know, for access to this, unless you're doing it through a bundle. You don't have to be an Apple Music subscriber to hear the music from the classes. But if you are a subscriber, you know, through individually or through a bundle, then you can save the songs as you're listening, or you can have them as playlists. So that's a neat integration. But I think just that they're saying like this is from Apple Music, that their contracts will be vastly greater than what Peloton has for music options, because they were sued. Yeah. They were sued and had to lose like a bunch of the back catalog from some major labels. And so that might be another competitive angle. And you can the apps look so well done. I mean, we knew from looking at the activity turn fitness app in, iOS 14 on the iPhone that you're going from 3 tabs to 2 tabs. Okay. There's going to be a 3rd tab for this service, you know,
yep.
It was obvious and that's what happens. But on the iPad, it's a new app called Fitness that is just for, you know, the service and the same thing for the Apple TV. And you browse by what the workout is, who the instructor is. You can look by time duration. By music genre, lots by mood. It's really, really neat. It's really well done.
Yeah, and based on the screenshots of the Apple TV version, you just walk up to the TV with your watch on and it will just sense that it's nearby and you could just go from there. So there's no log in or log out. You just come near and it will do it by proximity. So if you have multiple people in the house doing workouts.
I wonder if that requires the U1 and the Series 6.
Possibly. I mean, they could do it by Bluetooth, right? Sure. Time of flight. But that's what the screenshots show. So that'd be really cool if that's how
and
it works.
It comes by the end of 2020.
Yeah, that's the worst part about this announcement is that there's no firm date. It's available before the end of the year is what they kept saying. So that could be December, right? It could be a while off.
Yep.
And they're giving, just like they gave away TV Plus free for a time period, they're with new hardware, they're giving 3 months free of Fitness Plus with any new Apple Watch purchase. So if you buy a watch for Christmas, you can get 3 months, January, February, March.
You buy one today, you're going to be able to redeem it.
Yep.
When it's live.
When it goes live, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But I think in the long term, people are going to get this through the bundle, right?
It's competitively priced compared to other services at $10 a month or $80 a year. And that includes family sharing. So that's good. But with the bundle, it's this is one of those things where if you're actually going to use it, you know, then that $30 a month bundle for Apple One saves money.
Yeah. Let's talk about the bundle in a sec. Let's do our last sponsor of the episode. And it is again, Pillow.
All right.
Getting a good night's sleep is underrated, but with a little help, it can be life-changing. Pillow is an all-in-one sleep tracking solution to help you be more aware of your sleep patterns and discover what might be affecting your sleep quality. If you have an Apple Watch, tracking your sleep is as easy as wearing it to bed. Pillow will track and analyze your sleep automatically. And now, new with iOS 14, you can get a sleep report on your home screen with the Pillow widget, available in small and medium sizes. It shows your latest sleep report in a beautiful layout. Just tap on the widget to go straight to your sleep session analysis. Also in iOS 14, Pillow integrates beautifully with the system sleep modes. For instance, you can launch Pillow or start a sleep session when your scheduled bedtime or wind down mode kicks in. And Pillow launched all of these features on iOS 14's launch day, so you can use them right now. One of Pillow's most loved features is the ability to get a detailed heart rate diagram of every sleep session. Compare your sleep quality with weight, steps, caffeine consumption, and many more health metrics to discover how they might be affecting how you sleep. And with the recording mode, Pillow will save the sounds that you make during sleep, from sleep talking to sleep apnea, snoring, just unexpected noises in the night. You can record it, listen back, and a lot of users have been surprised by the results. Pillow is privacy-minded. All your sleep and audio data is encrypted and stored on device, and when it uses iCloud, it's using end-to-end encryption. Pillow is available now on the App Store for iPhone, Apple Watch, and iPad, newly updated for iOS 14. Discover all of Pillow's features at nabox.com/pillow. That's nebox.com/pillow. Sleep well and stay safe. Our thanks to Pillow for their support of Happy Hour.
Yeah, and I'll say regarding Pillow is that even if you're using watchOS 7, you need a sleep tracking app to get more detail out of your watch than what you'll get with built-in stuff. And, you know, you might as well use Pillow because they support the podcast.
We were criticizing the built-in sleep features long before we started getting sponsored by Pillow.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, Apple One. Good name, good value.
Yeah.
Three tiers.
I was surprised at how much of a decent deal it was, right?
Yeah, so Mark Harmon and Bloomberg had the name a few weeks ago. Our colleague at NFI Google had the name from the Apple Music for Android League, and then you found some more code with it. So it was Apple One for sure, and then it's Apple One and the keynote.
Yeah, and at least when I've been thinking about the Surface bundle leading up to it, you never expect Apple to be that generous, right? And I was, bundles are there so that they attach onto services that are already popular to make you spend a little bit more to then get stuff that isn't so popular right now, right? That you wouldn't normally pay for, or that most people wouldn't want to pay for, and they can accelerate the growth of those services by bundling
companies
together.
Companies don't lose money on bundles.
Yes. Like, yeah. In the aggregate, the numbers work out. And you can be very aggressive, or you can be, you know, quite timid. And I kind of thought the Apple bundle was going to be like, if you get Apple Music, maybe you can get, like, Arcade and TV Plus and get one of them for free. Or you can get, like, you buy three services, one of them's free, so it's like a $5 saving or something, right? Like, the bundles that they have, and it's called Apple One, but there's three tiers. I think they're pretty damn reasonable. Like, on Twitter and, like, the Instagram actions, I call them cheap. They're not cheap now that I reflect on it more, but they are good value. Like, most people, if you subscribe to Apple Music, like, most Apple Music subscribers will be saving money. Like, basically, if you have Apple Music, individual or family, plus you pay for 2 terabytes of iCloud storage, it doesn't matter what you buy, you're going to save money with a bundle instead. Like, and so the plan for Apple here is to get the millions of iPhone customers who don't pay for Apple Music and don't pay for iCloud storage to entice them onto a bundle so they start making revenue, right? Like, that's where this is aimed at. And so you have the individual plan, which is Music, TV Plus, Arcade, and 50 gigs of iCloud for $14.95. And if you pay for them individually, that'd be $21. So you're saving $6 on those four services. The family plan is Music, TV Plus, Arcade, 200 gigs of iCloud. That's $19.95.
And if you pay for six people versus one.
That's for six. By the way, on the individual plan, Arcade and TV Plus can still be shared with family members, even though it's called the individual plan.
That's how individually they work.
Because that's how they are. Because you can't get TV Plus and Arcade without being on the family plan, without being on family support. But yes, yeah, so the Apple One family plan is $19.95. If you bought individually, it'd be $27.96, a saving of about $8. Then you have the Premier plan, which is Music, TV Plus, Arcade, 2 terabytes of iCloud, News Plus, and Fitness Plus, which would normally be about $54.95 if you paid for it all separately, and with Premier it's $29.95.
Yeah, I am down for 15 for Apple Music Family anyway. Maybe right. 10 if I get selfish, but I've never done that. And well, with music, and then I'm down for 10 for 2 terabytes of iCloud storage, which is correct, shared with the family. And even if it was
so you already pay just on those two services, you already paid $25.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. And even if I wasn't doing family sharing, I would still pay the 10 because I can't do the lesser tier with photos.
Yep.
So then to say for $5 more a month, would I want to have TV Plus, which I would pay for anyway because I'm liking it. Arcade, I'd cancel it, but now I get to keep it. Cool.
Yeah.
News Plus, I like it in theory. And I want to, when I do, cause you know, I pay for it sometimes and then I stop.
Mm-hmm.
When I use it, I enjoy it. But the fact is, like, I could go a whole month without using it and pay for it. Now I can do that without feeling bad. So that's a benefit. Fitness Plus, $10 a month or $80 a year. I will definitely pay for that in some fashion, but now I don't have to think about that. I can just do it for $30 a month. This is a value for me.
Yeah. And for say me. Like, you didn't, because clearly one of the ways that they're making this a quote unquote value is they price Fitness Plus at $9.99 a month rather than like $5 a month.
Sure.
So then the high end Premier plan can be like 50% cheaper, right?
Even if
so,
Fitness Plus wasn't announced in a thing, I'd still be happy with this.
Right.
TV Plus.
Right. And
which
just
like on the fence about.
Yeah. So like imagine like you don't want News Plus, for instance, and you don't want Fitness Plus, right? So right now you pay $25 a month just for iCloud and Music Family, right? So the family plan is $19.95 and it gets you Music, TV Plus, Arcade, 200 gigs of iCloud. Now you can, they've already said that you can pay extra to up your iCloud quotas. So even if you get the lower plans, you can add more storage on. And potentially for the first time, you might even be able to have 4 terabytes of iCloud, because if you get the Premier plan, you can then top it up with another 2 terabytes. Again, Apple hasn't confirmed pricing here, but if you take standard pricing and you didn't want, you know, any of the rest of the stuff, you could pay like $25 and get 2 terabytes of iCloud, Arcade, TV Plus, and Music. So you're getting two things for free, regardless of how you slice it. Like, and as I said, if you pay already pay for Apple Music and 2 terabytes of iCloud, there's basically no way you're going to be losing out here. Like, if you just want Apple Music on its own and you don't want anything else, then yeah, that would cost you $9.95 or $9.99. And the cheapest bundle plan here is $14.95. But just for $5 more, they're going to give you TV Plus Arcade and some iCloud storage as well. Like, the only thing that's slightly stingy, I'd say, is the individual plan, and it gets you 50 gigs of iCloud. If that was 200 gigs for an individual, then I'd basically have nothing to complain about with the offerings here. Because, look, Apple's not a charity. They're here to make money. But these bundles seem good value for what they are, right? Like,
yeah, we were super skeptical on these being good values, even when Mark Gurman reported the four tiers.
I was like, basically expecting these kind of prices, but without any iCloud storage included at all.
Yeah, mm-hmm, yep.
Right. But you actually get iCloud in it.
Yep. Which is going to be good for a lot of people.
Yeah, I paid just like you. I pay Apple Music Family, and I pay for 2 terabytes of iCloud because, you know, we're a family and we have photos. And I'd definitely keep TV Plus. I think they got, you know, really good shows that I watch. I use it every single month. Arcade, use it very occasionally. I'd probably cancel it. Mm-hmm. News Plus, I don't really care, but I do like the fact that it has the Wall Street Journal in it. So that has some value to me. Fitness Plus, I think, is really cool. And I'm going to basically get that for maybe £1 more than what I pay right now. So
Fitness
I'm
Plus,
getting.
I think you'd be on the fence about otherwise, though, for $10 a month or $8
yes.
a year. Yeah, so this puts you in as Fitness Plus as a user.
Yeah, like, it's, like, Fitness Plus, I don't know if I pay $10 for it, right? Like,
I mean, it's a gym memberships are kind of that, you know, it could be more.
Yeah.
A lot of them are, like, a lot more, you know.
Because it's really cool and it's a great service, mm-hmm. but at the end of the day, it's just workout videos, right?
Yeah,
so, like,
right, yeah.
I kind of, before they announced the pricing.
With great watch integration.
With great integration, right? Yeah. Before they announced the Fitness Plus pricing, I thought it was going to be a $5 service like Arcade and TV Plus, right? That in my head, I know Peloton charges 13 or whatever, but in my head, I was like, okay, it's going to be a $5 service. But then when they announced it's $9.99, then they did the bundle. I was like, oh, this makes sense. It helps them make the Premier bundle seem even better value, right?
Yeah.
But that doesn't bother to me. I'm basically going to be paying £1 more than I pay right now, and I get, you know, Arcade, TV Plus, because obviously the 3 years is going to run out, News Plus, and Fitness Plus. Like, I can't complain. It seems fantastic. Like, yeah. Sign me up.
The thing that I'm excited about with News Plus being in the bundle is the audio stuff. Because mm-hmm. I've not paid for News Plus since that's been introduced. And so I've not tried it out. And it's not, and I don't want to pay for it just for that either, you know. But like if I've got it from the bundle and it's literally no more than I would pay for the three services I'd pay for individually, then it's like this is actually included, you know, for free to me.
Yeah.
Then I'll feel good about that. And like it's a part of CarPlay, you know, and I do a lot of driving and everything. And it's like, I've not even tried it out yet. And I'd feel bad about doing it just to try it. So
the gotcha on Apple One Premier is that it's only available in countries where News Plus is available. So you can only get it in the United Kingdom, United States, Australia, Canada. So hopefully they'll keep expanding News Plus countries, then they can launch Premier in more markets. And I'm sure they want to get Premier wherever they can. So that's probably a good incentive for them. And this is coming out later this fall sometime. They didn't give an exact date. It's not out right now with the software releases. And it will come out before Fitness Plus does, because they explicitly say that they'll add Fitness Plus on when it launches.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have maybe Apple One in October or whatever, and then Fitness Plus will follow in November or December, basically.
Oh, nice. The other product of this event was the iPad. iPads.
iPad.
Yeah.
The really important 8th generation iPad update.
iPad 8.
They spent like 15 minutes on it, I swear, or maybe 10 minutes, but they spent far longer on it time-wise than they really needed to, because it's the 7th gen iPad, but with an A12 chip instead of an A10 chip, and it's still a 329 and everything else is the same. Great, great product, 329 iPad, but that's what it is. They just give it a process bump. Fine, move on. iPad Air.
I like how you did that. Cool, thank you.
I mean, there's nothing to say about it.
The pencil support's awesome.
The iPad. The 8th gen iPad is identical apart from the chip inside.
Really?
Right?
Like, so the Apple Pencil support before?
Yeah, the Apple Pencil worked before. Yeah.
Mm, well,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, same smart keyboard support. Everything's the same. It's just literally processor change.
Okay.
The iPad Air. The rumors were right. The pamphlets were right. I think this is a great product, right? iPad Pro-like design, 10.9-inch screen. So just to make it slightly smaller than the 11-inch iPad Pro. Support for the Magic Keyboard. Second gen Apple Pencil, so it snaps on the side. It comes in cool new colors, just like the watches. You've got silver, you've got space gray, you've got rose gold, green, and a sky blue color. Mm-hmm. They did do the Touch ID top button, so you've got thin bezels, no Face ID. Instead, you press the top button with your finger, and it scans it.
And you don't have to click it to Correct. Turn it on. You can scan your finger, and that enough will turn on this display as an option.
Yeah, it's just like moving the home button. It's like the home button and how it worked before, but now it's in the power button. Yeah. And many people would even say that Touch ID and the power button on an iPad is better than Face ID because you can't cover up with your hands.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I love this product. The colors were a surprise. EvLeaks had the colors a few minutes before they were announced, like press images, which is impressive. But it just had me all the more excited for the rest of the keynote. Green, I think it looks very neat. Blue, like these are the first time that the iPads had these colors. Rose gold is a return from before, you know, and it looks, yeah. It looks like an iPad Pro at a glance, mm-hmm. but you can't get these colors with an iPad Pro, you know, and.
Yeah,
and,
you don't get. Promotion, right? You get stereo speakers now, but yeah. They're not four speakers, it's just landscape only.
Okay.
And you get USB-C, so if you want, and it'll mm-hmm. plug into external displays and everything like that.
The USB-C section, they're like, you know, it's faster data transfer and everything. It's like, come on, you're gonna do that on an iPad Pro, not a phone, not an iPhone Pro. Like, you know, come on.
They'll get to the iPhone eventually, yeah. But not this year. They say it's the same 12 megapixel rear camera as the iPad Pros. And it has an upgraded 7-megapixel FaceTime camera, and it has the A14 chip in it. But obviously, in
compared
a normal
to
year,
the A12Z or X,
yeah,
it's an A14, which is a brand new chip from Apple.
A brand new chip. Obviously, in a normal year, the iPhone would have had the A14 chip out now, but it got delayed, so it didn't happen. So we have this readjustment of the time schedule where the iPad comes first, harkening back to like the iPad 2.
But no 5G though. Which
no 5G. Kind of no. Yeah. It's a 5-nanometer process as we expected. 6-core CPU. They call it 40% faster than the A12.
This is the first with 5 nanometers. Is that right?
Correct. First, they said it's like the first chip in. The consumer electronics industry, basically.
Yeah, and they compared it. I mean, they showed like all the chips that Apple's used in iPads, and like the first one was 45 nanometers. That gave me the context I needed to appreciate 5 nanometers.
Yeah, they were like, it's the size of individual atoms. They said it's 40% faster than the previous iPad Air, but remember the previous iPad Air had an A12 chip in it, not A13. So if you're trying to estimate what the iPhone's going to be, you've got to take off some of that 40% because the A13 was about 20% faster than the A12. So if you do some quick maths, they're basically going to say that the A14, the iPhone's about 20% faster. So look out for the 20% faster stat next month.
Yeah. Price wise, like what were you thinking when you were watching the keynote and with the rumors? Like I was, you know, iPad Air has been $499 since they did. They took the 10.5-inch iPad Pro and they jiggered that to be the iPad Air, which was, I mean, you see iPad Air was like it was the new iPad at $499.
Yeah, because they got rid of the iPad Air for a while.
Yeah, then there was iPad Air 2, and that was the new iPad that year for $499.
That was before the Pros existed, right?
Right.
So it was more expensive.
And then they had the iPad Air 3, which is really the 10.5-inch iPad Air or iPad Pro, but minus, you know, the promotion stuff and some spec differences, but it was really good. This is the first, $599 iPad Air, which to me was like a bummer because I was hoping so much for $499. It would have been too good to be true, I guess, because it's basically the iPad Pro from the past two versions, the 11-inch versions. There's so little difference that, like, if you're using it like me and you do kind of casually, that you really appreciate. And so even that,
yeah, the only thing missing from this that I care about is promotion, basically.
That's, and for me, like, it's not gonna, it's cool, but like, I turn it on, you know, it's not.
Yeah, exactly. Not right. Like, for most people,
it's not
like,
retina.
Like, 120 hertz has been like a big, like, thing because obviously the iPhone's not gonna have it. Everyone was going mad about it on Twitter last week, but most people don't care. Like,
it's not retina. That's a big,
it's not the same as retina. No way. I had an inkling it was gonna be more expensive. Like, just looking at what the rumors were, I was like, if this comes out, there's no way they're going to keep it at $499. And then we had the Apple Watch section, and they kept the Series 3 Watch at $199. And I was like, there's no way this iPad Air update is going to be the same price because it's just adding too much for what it is. So $599 is fine. Like, I wish it would have been $499 too.
It'll go on sale.
But it'll go on sale. Yeah, it's close enough, right? And they gave it it's hard to criticize, right? Like, they gave it too much stuff for me to be like annoyed over $100 price change.
Yeah, the works with the second generation pencil, you know, flat sides, USB-C, works with the 11-inch iPad is Pro's Magic Keyboard. It's really, really good. I mean, the storage differences, I haven't really looked at the comparison, but...
It's 64 gigs to start, so that's maybe where you'd say, I mean, for $599, really, maybe it should really be higher than that.
Yeah, but 32 is like paint. You can't do 32 anymore. You can't.
Yeah, I still think 64 is acceptable for base storage.
I mean, they sell iPhones from 64 and Pro models. My iPhone is a 64 gigabyte.
With exactly, so. Right? Like... And with iCloud Photo Library, or iCloud Photos now that they call it that,
yeah,
it's fine. Like, 64 gigs of storage is fine. Like, it's not... for ages, we spent on the 16 gigabyte, like, you know, fighting for air. That was terrible. Then they had, like, 32 gigs for 1 year or so. But they've been on 64 for a while, and I don't think we've quite eclipsed that yet, right?
Like to go up to from 64, you got to 128, and that's such a big jump, you know?
Yeah, cool. Like I can't. I'm not going to complain about that. Like,
yeah, I mean, the to me, if it was $499, I would have prioritized buying it, I think, over other things, just because it's you know, I sold the Pro, and because I didn't feel like for what it's worth that it was worth having around for me. But for $500, like you're looking at, like back on iPad prices from the beginning, it's like, that's a really good iPad. But I'm kind of relying on it going on. Like, if it hits that price and goes on sale, you know, from like Best Buy or somebody, then I'll prioritize it.
Probably
it.
Will by like Black Friday in November.
Yeah. And because there's so many colors, like if it turns out green's a dud, you know, and they've got like too many, then I'll be like, okay, cool. You know, or same for blue, or like if people only want the colors and like silver and space gray are duds, then like, you
know. And it's not, it won't be on sale until next month. So probably what, like the first week of October or something.
Yeah.
And then in the last 1 minute of the event, they announced that iOS 14, WatchOS 7 and tvOS 14 would be shipping the day after.
Cool.
iOS 14 is out on September 16th, which, as we record, is yesterday.
Yeah.
I don't know why they compressed the timeline so much. Like, what's the point? Like, it just annoyed developers. Like, you could have given them a heads up a week ago. They could have just had the GM on a weekly schedule like they normally do. Like, a normal year, you'd have watch pre-orders on Friday, ships the following Friday. But instead... you have watch release on Friday, which means that the initial reviews are literally after like 24 hours of use, so they're basically worthless. And you have everyone mad that they've had to rush to submit their apps at like 10 p.m. last night, and half the apps aren't available yet because of the same reason. And like, why did they bother with... Apple sets all the dates here. Most of the watches are already out of stock, back ordered to October. Like, just ship it a week later. Like, what was the rush? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, as a non-developer, I don't care. Like, it's the software was good enough when they released it, and it's not like they've had years where it's been super bad and they release it because they're on a schedule. For this one, you know, none of the software updates to me are horrible in terms of performance and everything and reliability. It's just the developer side that makes, you know, this like why now. And even to that, there were a lot of app updates ready to go. Like, you know, there was 1 day's notice for developers, but there was also like June until now and like, you know, all the beta version. So people managed.
And normally you do like when the new major operating systems come out, we like set our favorite features and stuff, but I think we'll save that for next week's episode because we don't have the same. We get to pick our dates too. We don't have to jump to Apple's drum.
That's true. People have mentioned in the chat that iOS 14.2 developer beta is out. So we've got no.
How does that not surprise me?
Yeah. We have no 14.1, which is like, I don't know what is 14.1.
That's going to be the iPhone firmware.
Yeah. What's 14.2? Like, I don't know if we know anything about it yet.
I mean, it might have Fitness Plus beta in it, maybe.
Bundle beta.
Bundle beta, maybe, yeah. Yeah, the reason they've skipped 14.1 is that's the one that's got all the iPhone 12 stuff in it. That's why.
Oh, and they haven't shown the 12 yet.
Yeah, so exactly.
They don't want to.
Yeah. And for whatever reason, they don't change the numbers, but that's what happened. But yeah, the classic Apple schedule, you get 1 day on iOS 14, and then we're straight into the 14.2 betas.
Yeah, cool. I wonder if there's any other betas that have come out, like for the watch, or, you know, if we run like watch.
I mean, by the time we actually release this episode, iOS 15 will be out.
You know, release this episode as we do it live, it's live. You know? I like that about it. Yeah, cool. I mean, I loved the event. I was happy not doing writing any stories in the moment, and I've had time to like just focus on what I care about. And to me, like Fitness Plus was a not a surprise, but like that it happened and that
you know, it exceeded my expectations of how well they did it.
Yeah. And then the colors of the iPad Air were a surprise to me. And also, Love to Dream with an O or zero for the O. It's so entertaining how Love the Dream on Twitter handled this event, because they would do just like letter tweets that didn't mean anything, and they were all like acronyms for what they were actually predicting. 7.1 is out as well for WatchOS. Cool. Thanks you, Justin. And Love to Dream followed up after the event with a quote tweet of the original prediction with just letters and then an explanation for what it was. And they were so good. Like, it was talking about how there would be not one but two iPads and how the new iPad Airs would come in colors. No one said iPad Air in colors yet. Love to Dream had that.
Yeah, he tweeted on the 21st of June, IAFWCWTNCGAB.
Which happens to be my password for everything.
Yeah. And after the event, he decoded it as iPad Air 4 will come with two new color, green and blue.
That is so much better than like one of those code encrypted tweets.
The hashing things, yeah.
Yeah, I don't really get those at all.
And he also had NOOITM, not only one iPad this month.
So good.
I'd say good event. Apple Watch is kind of meh. It's fine, but it's not going to set any world on fire. iPad Air, fantastic. Apple One Bundle, I'm surprised I'm actually saving money. And Apple Fitness Plus looks great.
Yeah, for me, the Apple Watch stuff, I think it's all very cool if you're upgrading from a Series 4 or earlier. Series 6 is a good upgrade.
Yeah, like there's nothing wrong with it as like an incremental update in the product lineup, but it doesn't like excite me to.
I mean, if there was a new color of stainless steel, like if it was like red or blue stainless steel, then it'd be like, yeah, I love this thing, I'm getting it. But the aluminum ones have just never been my go-to. But for most people, they are. And so I'm excited that for most people, you can now get a watch that's a different color than space gray silver or a version of gold. I've been after the iPhone XR and 11, why not? So it's cool. That's actually been one of my review things. Like when the Series 4 came out, I was like, you know, we have when the 10R came out, it's like those colors, those should be Apple Watches. They're aluminum. Why not? You know, now they are. So, or they're starting to do it at least. So yeah, I loved the event. As we know, we're probably just, you know, weeks away from another event, which will be even more stuff. Cause like the things that we didn't get, you know, obviously anything with iPhone 12 through 12 Pro, nothing with AirTags, which is who knows when.
Find my AirTags.
Yeah, nothing with AirPod Studio, the Apple on your headphones, but they seem to be leaking faster and fast, like more and more in detail. There was a video this week that went out.
Small HomePod.
Yeah, HomePod Mini or HomePod.
Apple TV update, maybe. And the big one, the Apple Silicon Max. I'm so excited to see.
Yeah, we can have an event in September and have Macs come out in like before, you know, December time, and like just to see them will be so exciting. So, and all the software updates are out except for Big Sur, which is totally fair. We're on beta 7 or so of that. That's to be expected. So, but all in all, you know, good digestible event. We made a 1 hour event, a 2 hour episode, and
good episode though. Good episode.
Cool. Nice. All right. That is the Happy Hour podcast for this week. Did you know we do some Q&A stuff, and I'm exhausted. I don't know about you.
We'll do Q&A next week.
Okay. Thanks for everyone who did ask questions. I think we tried to integrate them into the show, though. A lot of people had questions about the GMT watch face and stuff like that. So cool. We will be back next week. Bye, everybody.